This is an
ENN
special report. Now reporting.
I believe in societal norms.
When the clock struck six, it meant one thing.
I said already, Don, it was embarrassing. Don't scream at me on the show.
Don't defend
him. It was horrifying.
Now, from the ESPN New York News Desk, here's Andrew Gundling.
You couldn't possibly understand the hurt.
That's right. Peter is off tonight. The whole group will be back tomorrow and for the rest of the week, I believe. Michael, Don, and Peter. Andrew Gundling, in the meantime, filling in on ENN here on this Monday evening. We start ENN tonight, of course, by saying hello first to Don.
I'm a tissue in the world of life.
That is deep. And, of course, we say hello to Bob Wischusen as well.
I care about the football. True.
Yeah. Very nice.
Yep. Is that your first drop, Bob?
Is that the best I gave you? I didn't give you anything better than that today? That's disappointing performance on my part.
I care about the football.
No, there had to be something better than that.
Yeah, I would think.
Because that's your first drop. You don't want your first drop to be that.
I think I have a drop where I screamed about being Jet Boy.
I'm making it rain.
Yeah, maybe that. But I think I screamed about being Jet Boy a couple of years ago when I filled in on this show for Peter, and then Peter followed that up by doing a survey, like an online poll, the following week while he was working with Alan, asking people to vote which guy he thought was better, and then also on the poll voted for Alan himself.
How am I a Jet fanboy?
There it is.
I am paid to be loud and annoying.
And I'm good at that, too.
See, we have a whole catalog, actually.
Yeah.
All right, guys. So we starting in and tonight with some football as we close in on training camp. I'm starting to get the feeling that the Saquon Barkley story, his status, is going to become more and more of an issue as we get closer to training camp in week one. An update today, he was asked about where he's at in his recovery.
I've been asked a lot. I guess that's the theme of this summer going to be when I'm going to be back. But no, I don't have an answer, to be honest. I'm not trying to, lead it up to it and stuff like that or build something up. I don't have an answer. It's a fun process, but it's a tough process at the same time. So just got to continue to listen to my body, listen to the trainers, listen to the coaches, and just take it day by day.
Is it at least safe to say, day one, you're not going to be able to go full go, right?
I don't know. We'll see. I guess we'll see, right?
How about week one? Do you feel like you'll be ready to play then?
I don't know. I guess we'll see. Just taking it day by day and just listen to my body. And whenever I'm able to get out there, make sure that I'm 110%. Not just for, safety and healthy of myself, my well-being, but just so I can go out there and compete at a high level and show the world who Saquon is.
I don't know how much nonverbal communication matters to you guys, but when he answered those questions about whether or not he'd be ready for training camp or for week one, he did have a big smile. I don't know if that's worth reading into at all.
That's, because usually when you say you don't know, that means it's probably no. And we are close enough, I think, to camp and not that far away from opening day, where if it's still in question for an injury that happened, what was that, Bob? Week
two.
Yeah. So he had the surgery for the torn ACL in October.
Right. So fast forward almost a year later, and he's still not sure. That's, he might have been smiling or whatever, but was it a Chapman smile where it's like you're smiling, right, but it's kind of a negative, or smiling like, I'm playing coy here?
Yeah, I don't know. Coy is kind of how I took it.
Yeah, I would say a couple things. Number one, you still have to get into football shape, right? You're going to camp to get ready to play football. Pads are on. You will have some full contact days. But it used to be, I talk to Marty about this all the time, it used to be guys would go to camp to get in shape, right? Like, they had six preseason games back in the 70s. Guys would come in kind of fat and out of shape from the winter or from the, spring, and they would get – these guys come into camp in shape from day one. They work out the whole year. So Saquon Barkley knows. Right now, he would have a very – he has been putting his knee and his entire body through, I'm sure, rigorous paces to try to be ready for camp. Because all of these guys step on the field day one and are pretty much at least in shape.
Yeah, a source told our own Jordan Ronan last month that Barkley is not expected to be a full go for the start of camp, but again, that was a month ago. And just to look at Saquon when he was giving this press conference and he was playing a little bit, he looks the same way he did in September of last year. Like, he looks like he's in full-on playing
Absolutely.
Shape.
It's just a matter of having the confidence to do the things that he needs to do on that injury. Now, Bob, we're going to have our first ever three preseason schedule, three games.
Yep.
So how do you think it'll traditionally go? Normally it was, you know, no starters usually played in week four.
Yep.
Will that be the same for week three, or do you think you'll see starters in every game because there's only three of them?
I think it'll vary team to team. I mean, like the last 5 or 6 years, LaDainian Tomlinson was in San Diego. He never played in the preseason. He didn't play one snap,
right?
So I do think for veteran guys, they will probably still sit the last preseason game. Maybe in the second preseason game, they'll break a sweat. And what you're seeing a lot of teams doing now is scheduling these joint practices, right? The Jets have two sets of joint practices with two other teams. Coaches have always talked about the joint practices being as, if not maybe more valuable than preseason games because it's controlled. Right now, I can put these guys in game situations, but I can make the situation that I – like if I want to see my offense face 3rd and 7 at their own 25-yard line against this defensive look, I could just say go out there and do that. You don't have to wait for the game situation to pop up. So I think that in the actual games themselves – it'll probably vary team to team depending on how many veterans you have and how many young guys you have that you think need work.
Let's see, staying with football for a sec, pretty much ever since Peyton Manning retired, we all wondered if he'd get into broadcasting, specifically on the Monday Night Football broadcast. Now we kind of have an answer. ESPN announced today that Peyton and Eli, both from a remote location, will do an alternative megacast together on ESPN2 as kind of a complement to the regular Monday Night Football broadcast on ESPN with Levy, Riddick, and Brian Griese. They'll be joined by different celebrities on each of these, former players, current players, and they're going to do it for 10 games this season, next season, and the following season. So for the next 3 years, 10 games per year, you'll have this alternative broadcast on ESPN2 with the Manning brothers and other possible guests.
Do they need a play-by-play guy?
So that is one thing, is no host for this. They didn't. It wasn't termed as a play-by-play guy, but
my
they
phone
did say
didn't ring.
No host has been announced for this yet, if anybody wants to throw their hat in the ring.
Hat thrown.
Bob is in.
Yeah, I'm in.
Bob can only be in one place at a time. Bob's a very demanding schedule.
Yeah, well.
And certainly could not be available for a Jets Monday nighter.
Yeah, those have only been kind of one a year for a while now. So,
but I think this could be cool.
I think it's
a pretty neat idea.
Yeah, and I think the two of them together will be very entertaining. They play off of each other really well.
Yeah. Keep your eyes open for that as football season gets ready to start up.
Yeah, that'll be fun.
Guys, in baseball, a couple of strange baseball scenes over the weekend. So first, we'll start in the Bronx. A Yankee fan hit Red Sox outfielder Alex Verdugo with a baseball on Saturday. Red Sox manager Alex Cora briefly pulled his team off the field. That fan has since been banned for life from attending any major league game. Verdugo, not surprisingly, was furious. He was restrained by Boston first base coach Tom Goodwin, exchanging words with the fans. Here was Aaron Boone afterward talking about the incident.
Someone threw the ball and hit him at point blank from behind. It's awful, embarrassing, unacceptable. My understanding is they did catch the guy. Hopefully he's in jail right now. It's just a bad situation. And if I was Alex Cora, I would have done the same thing as far as going out and getting his guys off the field. And there's zero place for that in this great game and in this great rivalry.
So that's Aaron Boone.
Well,
the right
now,
tone, I would say. On
I wish I knew the writer that sent this out, because I can't remember who it was. I'm sure somebody on Twitter will remind me that. So a fan that was close to this fan sent an email to this writer, like almost excusing his behavior. And apparently what happened was Verdugo threw the ball to try to get a Red Sox fan to get the ball, and he got the ball instead. And the fans, I guess, were like egging him on to throw back onto the field instead of giving it to the Red Sox fan, and he succumbed to the pressure and he threw it on the field, intending to just throw it on the field and accidentally hit him. And I know that it was a tradition that started at Wrigley Field back in the day that when the opposition hits a home run, you throw the ball back. But there's plenty of room out there. If you want to throw the ball back, you shouldn't hit anybody. All right? So I understand the sentiment. Maybe he didn't mean to do it, but you know what? It's hard to really explain that away when you hit him. You can throw it anywhere on the field and not come close to him. And then you have Yankee fans saying, well, what happened to the guy at Fenway that hit Stanton with a ball when Stanton hit a home run at Fenway? Well, Stanton was rounding second base. If that guy intended to hit Stanton, sign him up. But this is what happens when you throw the ball on the field. Don't do it. Then you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to worry about hitting anybody. But we live in a time now where people take advantage of situations, so I'm sorry. I can't give a fan the benefit of the doubt when he hits a player with a baseball. So don't throw the ball on the field. How about that?
That's a good jumping off point.
Yeah. I did see a video, Don. It looked like a video that a fan posted that then made its way to Twitter of the guy who did it, I guess, as security was kind of trying to figure out what had happened. Like, he was pretty sheepishly sitting in his seat, kind of nervously bouncing his leg. I think he knew that, I don't know, I kind of just got the vibe from him of the story you just told that that kind of makes sense, that maybe this was not like an angry fan trying to hit Alex Verdugo with a ball. Like you said, I don't know that that matters, but it just, I don't know, paints a little bit of a different picture maybe of what happened there. And then also on Saturday night at Nationals Park, Nationals Park was overtaken by the uncertainty and confusion of a shooting that took place just outside the ballpark during the Nationals-Padres game. Gunshots were heard. Wasn't clear where they were coming from at the time. Many fans fled their seats. There was video of some fans sprinting out of the stadium. Some took shelter in the Padres' dugout. Here is some of what it sounded like on the Padres broadcast. I believe this is from before it was really known what was going on.
This is really
your attention,
scary.
Please. We ask that you remain inside the stadium at this time. Once again, your attention, please. We ask that you remain inside the stadium at this time.
So several people have run into both the Nationals and Padres dugout here and have run out of the stadium. And they're being asked, as you just heard, to stay in the stadium at the moment. We are not sure what's taking place. We will step aside and come back.
Once again, your attention, please. For your safety, please remain inside the stadium at this time.
After that, the PA announcer made it even clearer, saying that the incident had occurred outside of the stadium. The game was suspended in the bottom of the sixth and made up the following day. So a really bizarre scene at Nationals Park Saturday night.
Now, what I couldn't figure out from all the coverage, because I didn't see any video footage of actually hearing the gunshots.
So I did. It was okay. as the top of the sixth was ending, as the Nationals were coming off the field, and they're kind of cutting to a commercial break. Just before they go to break, you can hear several kind of faint, distant pops, and you can see a couple Nationals players kind of look back towards. I don't know if it was towards the outfield or where they were looking, but apparently that was the moment that it happened.
But people that were running, like I'm seeing footage of them running and turning tables over and hiding behind the tables. Like, mm-hmm. Was everybody just so 100% sure that it was gunshots, or was something reported? Did they hear some information that there was a gunman in the building? I just can't imagine you hearing those shots that people would react that way unless they had some information. Did they hear something other than just the shots to make them react that way?
I think that was all it was, but then you know how things like this can happen. It kind of snowballs. You know, people see other people reacting a certain way. Maybe they didn't hear the shots themselves, but they hear somebody in a panic telling them what had just happened, and now that's it. Like, whether you heard it or not, whatever you think may have been going on or not, now you're kind of just swept up in the crowd and just doing whatever you can, to protect yourself.
I was just kind of curious because I didn't know what information they had, because they're telling you to stay in the building. There's footage of people actually leaving the stadium, which is obviously the wrong thing to do. If the gunshots are outside the stadium, you want to stay in the stadium. You know, so I didn't know if there was some sort of misinformation that was out there, because the footage is just really scary.
Yeah.
By the way, Brendan Cuddy was the reporter that got the email from the fan that was close to the guy that threw the ball. So I wanted to give him credit for that.
Gotcha.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Guys, Mets in action tonight against the Reds. No Luis Rojas. He will not be a part of it. Been suspended for two games following yesterday's confrontation with umpires in Pittsburgh. The official statement on his punishment referred to it as, quote, excessive arguing.
We got to give you more than that. Like, he was definitely apoplectic.
He yelled at us a lot and loud.
Excessive arguing is a very friendly way of deeming what it is that he did. He also received an undisclosed fine to go along with it.
He was giving him the business, you know?
Don't talk to me that way.
Like I said to Don earlier, he got his money's worth.
Yeah. By the way, I saw this tweet from Anthony DeComo. He posted, Carlos Carrasco, with a torn right hamstring, will make his next rehab start Tuesday for AAA Syracuse. Luis Rojas said, it's possible Carrasco will make his Mets debut 5 days after that.
Okay.
So by this weekend, you could see Carrasco out on the mound for the Mets.
So that would be Blue Jays afternoon game, I think, Sunday, or Braves Monday. They have an off day in there, but, of course, DeGrom's on the IL. So I'm not sure how that would affect their rotation. But, yeah, I mean, he could pitch Sunday afternoon.
Yeah, because, it's the three games in Cincinnati, afternoon game on Wednesday, off Thursday.
Right.
And then the weekend series against Toronto and then Atlanta. So
right.
Yeah.
You know, you want a baptism by fire. Welcome back, Carlos. Go pitch to the Blue Jays.
Yeah, seriously, with that lineup?
Right.
Yeah, you're not kidding. Guys, Saturday we also had another really good NBA Finals game as the Bucks won their third straight to take a 3-2 series lead. The big moment, less than 20 seconds to go. Bucks up one. Suns ball. Here's Mike Breen.
Booker the drive. Gets inside. Leans in. Back away. It's stolen by Holiday. Phoenix has to foul, and a pinnacle foul throws it down! And a foul! Giannis on the alley-oop! What a turnaround!
God, what a sequence that was. Really fun ending to that game. Great game, big comeback from the Bucks. They were down 16, and now up 3-2, a chance to close it out tomorrow night at home.
You know, going into this series, I picked Suns in either 6 or 7, in large part on, I thought Ayton would give the Suns at least enough of an approximation of what the Bucks get from Giannis. And I said Paul was better than Holiday, and I thought Booker was better than Middleton. Well, Middleton has been every bit as good as Booker. Paul's looked old. Mm-hmm. Like, these last three games, he has looked old, and Ayton has kind of disappeared because Paul can't play the pick-and-roll game with him because he looks old, and he looks slow, and he looks tired. And I'll tell you, Middleton and Holiday have been amazing. Middleton, to me, looks like a legit Robin to anybody's Batman.
Definitely.
They have been better than I ever thought that they would be.
And such a turnaround. After game two, the feeling was this is going to be a short series, a dog of a series. And now it's become almost a classic series based on how games four and five finished. And now you almost feel like it's the Bucks are winning. It's like over. As over as you thought it was, the Suns up 2-0. Now, yeah, I can't imagine Milwaukee losing that game at home.
It is crazy to think about Giannis juxtaposed with other guys that have won championships or played for championships and been MVPs. Those guys, like the LeBrons and the Kobes and the Steph Currys, the entire offense runs through them. Giannis, all he does, especially in the fourth quarter of these games when they need buckets, is he sets up Chris Middleton. He sets up Jrue Holiday. I mean, he's the secondary or third option. He plays pick and roll. Sometimes he gets it downhill. But without Paul, and because Paul can't set up Ayton, the entire Phoenix offense is Devin Booker doing whatever he can.
Yeah.
He's the only guy that can consistently create offense for them, and he can't do it by himself. And the good news for Giannis is Giannis doesn't have to do it by himself.
Nope.
He's got two guys that are capable of basically scoring along with Booker. And that, to me, has been where this series has turned. Paul and Ayton were still great in games one and two, and they have just disappeared because Paul has looked old.
And then the narrative's changed for him too, right, Bob? After going up 2-0, he's going to win the championship. He'll likely opt out, and he's going to go someplace else. And now you wonder what's going to happen, because how attractive is he going to be if he decides to opt out for big money? Does he just stay in Phoenix? You know, or does this now become where, if I want to get that championship, am I just going to have to go to L.A. and play with LeBron and AD?
And you know, and the way these playoffs have gone, watch Phoenix go win game six.
Oh, yes.
Watch that happen, and watch us get a game seven that we never saw coming.
Well, you know, it's interesting you say that, because it's not like, you know, they could have very easily won the last two games.
Yep.
You know, so they weren't blown out, but it just, in Milwaukee, they've only lost once at home in the playoffs. Boy, it just feels like it's their game to win. And give Peter Rosenberg credit. He liked where the Bucks were after the first two games.
Bang, bang!
What are you, crazy? Maybe you like it to get back to Phoenix at 2-2 because Milwaukee's been good at home, but to win the series? And
that's
he
right,
man.
Right.
Yeah, we'll be curious to hear from him. I kind of made fun of him after he said it. I said, well, yeah, Peter, they got him right where they want him. And in the end, now they've won three straight and they're a game away from getting it done. And that will do it for ENN on this Monday.
Well done.
Bob, this was a special show. Seriously, it was a lot of fun. You know your stuff, and outstanding talk show host, only topped by your ability to do play-by-play. It was an honor to work with you for the last 4.5 hours.
Oh, what a guy. Boy, that was real. That sounded legitimately sincere.
No, it was sincere.
I appreciate that.
You know, I don't
lie. Not a blast.
I got a lot of things wrong with me, but liar is not one of them. Chris Carlin is up next. The band's back together tomorrow on Yes at 98.7 ESPN New York.
Thanks for listening to the Michael K. Show podcast. Hear more of Michael, Don, and Peter live weekday afternoons starting at 2 on 98.7 ESPN in New York, the ESPN app, the TuneIn app, or on your smart speaker.